From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, Michael Jackson has been accused of being a pedophile, but a Broadway musical about the singer is still moving forward. Then musician Lila Downs explores themes of migration in the United States and Mexico and uses songs to bridge cultural divides.
That's what music has been to me, is an enormous tool that I can express these misunderstandings sometimes, hopefully bring people together. I really do believe that.
And a veteran R&B singer who transformed a 60s hippie anthem into a soulful ballad. All that coming up on The Frame. A documentary about Michael Jackson that premiered earlier this year offered compelling evidence that the late singer was a pedophile. In the wake of the documentary called Leaving Neverland, a lot of people reassessed Jackson and his legacy, but a planned Broadway musical about Jackson was not abandoned. In fact, it's now got an opening date next August. Greg Evans is an associate editor and Broadway critic at Deadline. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So tell us the latest news about the musical. It has had a somewhat rough start already. What do we know so far?
It has been in development for quite a while, certainly long before the latest accusations, the documentary that was on HBO. And so you can only imagine, you know, that they sort of were blindsided, as everyone who had anything to do with Michael Jackson or was involved in a Michael Jackson project was at that point.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you what the creative team has said. The director is Christopher Wheeldon. The writer of the book is Lynn Nottage, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright. Her plays include Sweat. What have they said about what they're doing and how what they're doing might have been changed by the news that came out in the documentary?
They haven't been giving a lot of interviews, which isn't unusual for a musical or any play. This musical was initially supposed to have a pre-Broadway engagement in Chicago, which was canceled. And it was canceled right around the same time that that documentary was aired. Now, they say that the two things had nothing to do with each other. We have no reason to doubt that, but there is that timing. So what they have told, I believe it was a Chicago newspaper, is that the musical focuses on his music. It's not a sort of biographical thing. It's not, it doesn't get into his personal life much. In fact, what it does is it focuses on one period of his life when he is getting ready for the Dangerous Tour in 1992. And it shows him in rehearsals for that.
Even if this isn't going to be a classic jukebox musical, musicals based on famous musicians often do really well on Broadway. I'm going to play a little bit from a recent and current hit. That's from Beautiful, the Carole King musical that has grossed more than $267 million so far. There's a new Tina Turner musical opening soon. Then there's a show featuring songs from Alanis Morissette called Jagged Little Pill. It feels like there's a big appetite on Broadway for shows about famous musicians.
Yeah, well, look, one of the runaway hits of last season, one of the few big musical hits, is called Ain't Too Proud, which is a Temptations jukebox musical, and it's doing extremely well. Audiences love it, critics liked it, and it's a really sort of, when you think of a jukebox musical, it's a really standard jukebox musical. It's just one hit after another performed by these guys that, you know, sound and look very much like the Temptations. They have the moves down, and it goes into some of the, you know, it goes into their biographies, and it doesn't shy away from some of the darker elements. There's drugs and there's, you know, infidelity, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, in the end, you're left with the fact, with the impression that you still like these guys. They're the heroes of the show.
We're talking with Greg Evans at Deadline about a planned Michael Jackson musical. I want to play a cut from an interview I did with the director of Leaving Neverland. The director is Dan Reed.
You know, Michael was an amazing entertainer. And his music is part of the fabric of American life and part of is the soundtrack to so many precious memories for so many people. So, you know, I'm definitely not advocating ripping that out. You know, what do you do with art when the maker of the art is a flawed or even an evil person? Do you discard it? I don't know how much art would we have left if we conducted an audit of all the artists out there.
He brings up an interesting point that even if Michael Jackson is a polarizing figure, do you ignore him completely? I know it's kind of an existential question, but where do you come down on a subject like that?
I don't think you can ignore them completely. Look, I'm looking right now at this poster that they've put out for the show, and it shows a sort of Michael Jackson, an illustration of Michael Jackson in silhouette doing the moonwalk. And, you know, you look at this and immediately you remember what an incredible performer he was. I mean, there's just no getting around that. And if they can make us forget everything else and just see that, then they could have a huge hit on their hands. There was one last year, Donna Summer, a musical. And, you know, she had a falling out with her gay audience. She said some very controversial things about AIDS at the time, at the height of the AIDS crisis. And she lost a big part of her audience because of that. And this musical just sort of brushed all that aside in a very unconvincing way. And I don't think it did well. And I think that had played a big part in it. I think in some ways the Donna Summer audience, certainly I did as a critic when I was there, I felt it was lying to me by not acknowledging what her truth was. But that's walking a fine line because they can't dwell on it either. This isn't going to be an expose. You don't go to these kind of shows to have a heavy experience. You go because you want to celebrate the artist and relive those moments that you remember of the artist, you know, when you were fans.
Greg Evans is associate editor and Broadway critic at Deadline. Greg, thanks so much for coming on the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Coming up next on The Frame, Lila Downs and her protest songs for the 21st century. The chili pepper is a fruit, yes, like the tomato, it's not a vegetable, that can bring heat and suffering, but used right, it's full of joy and flavor. Singer Lila Downs, who's performing in Southern California next week, had that in mind when making her latest album, Al Chile. For 25 years, Downs has told stories about migration, feminism, and indigenous rights in both the United States and Mexico. In other words, she is not afraid to get political. I asked Downs about the meaning behind her album's title, Al Chile.
Basically, it means give it to me like it is. And it's curious because when men use the phrase, it's really macho. But when women use it, it's like, you know, very funny. So it's one of those unusual phrases that comes, of course, stems from the way our culture goes. But at the same time, it's about the senses. And this album is very much about the senses.
I want to ask you a little bit about when you started working on this record, what was going on in the world, and how those events started shaping the kinds of songs that you were going to record.
Migration has been an issue for me all my life. Of course, I have been very privileged because I grew up back and forth. My father was a university professor. My mother, indigenous, Mixtec woman. And so it was kind of confusing because I remember there was always like not very good communication, of course, because of language, but also cultural misunderstandings. And so I think that's what music has been to me, is an enormous tool that I can express these misunderstandings sometimes and hopefully bring people together. I really do believe that. I think that Clandestino is a piece that we did on this album that points at at migration and of course, makes us think of our history, human history, and the way we move around over the different continents.
I want to ask you about that song. It's a song that Manu Chao did in 1998. So 21 years later, you have re-recorded it and you've added some new lyrics. So let's listen to a little bit of your version of Clandestino. There's a line which means, if we don't fight for the children, what will become of us? And that seems to be very important, not just in the song, but in this whole album. Tell me about that lyric and why it means so much to you.
It is, yeah. Well, I was invited by Joan Baez, actually, to be part of the Lantern Tour a while back. What we did was they invited me to come along with some singer-songwriters. Steve Earle was one of the people spearheading this project. And one of the things that we did was support the detention centers by doing these concerts. And I became aware of all these videos that are circulating on the web about the children at the detention centers, and really alarmed by what was going on and I understand is still going on today. So I think we don't want to look at it. In some ways, and it's very painful.
Well, that brings up kind of a bigger question about the way that a song, a movie, a book can look at an issue like that. You say we don't want to look at it, and yet we must to understand it. So how much of what you're trying to do is to say you need to pay attention to this thing that you might be ignoring, and not only that, you need to figure out how you are going to react to it and what you're going to do about it?
Well, I think that's the secret of art, right? And some of us might do a song that really turns heads, and then at times it just kind of exists and doesn't make much of a wave or a ripple, as the Grateful Dead would say. But I think it's important for me in my life to mention certain things. And if I find a beautiful song where I can express these thoughts, of course, I'm very happy to sing it and perform it. And if I can't find a song that I feel is speaking in the moment, I usually write a song about it. And that's what happened with Al Chile.
I want to ask you about a sound that is heard a lot in this record that I think was inspired by sonideros, which is a mobile sound system that is used by DJs. What is that about, and what are you trying to capture from sonideros in this record?
Yeah, well, that really would be a question for Camilo Lara. We invited
him.
Who is
one of your producers?
Yeah, he's the producer on this album. He's someone I've known for like 20-some years. I said to him, I would love to do an album with banda, but I want to figure out a way for it to become, you know, accessible and danceable. Cuando me muera, como te agradecería que pusieras en mi tumba dos botellas de mezcal. I wanted slightly a different version this time around, you know, going to the actual village and recording people on site. And that was really exciting for me because I love that kind of natural sound that bands have. And then, of course, Camilo, you know, did the post-production in studio and did a lot of effects and these kinds of things.
We're talking with Lila Downs about her new record, Al Chile. I want to play another song from your album. It's called Caminos de mi Vida, or I guess Paths of My Life. And it's a song that you do with your mom, who sings in the Mixtec language. Tell me about the song and about your collaboration with your mom.
Well, this is an amazing song. I think there are, you know, few songs in your life that you say this is one of the songs, right? And the lyric also is very specific to mother. One of the lyrics says, I didn't know that life would be this way. I'm surprised. It's very different from what I envisioned it to be when my mother took care of me and I was a child. And that's basically the lyric. And then another part of the lyric says, I hope one day to pay back the favor of being raised by my parents or by my mother mainly. So it's a Mother's Day song, really. And I asked my mother to translate it in Mixtec. And so we worked on it together. And she was very emotional about it. She was like, wow. You know, this lyric really made me cry. But cry about, you know, it's just the miracle of life.
And it's not just that this song is in Mixtec. There are different languages throughout the album.
Yeah, that's kind of been a question for me throughout my career. I've tried to, educate people through music. I hope not to be too preachy, but I hope that people in the U.S. especially learn that indigenous languages are alive today and well, and being spoken by a lot of people who work here in the kitchens, in the farms, and have a heritage that is quite beautiful poetically.
For a lot of people, language can be a barrier. And certainly there's been a lot of conversation in this country about barriers between the United States and Mexico, particularly in the form of a wall. When you think about the role that art can play, music can play in challenging those constructs and those barriers, where do you see your work fitting in, and how can music take down those things that divide us?
I really do think that art makes much more of a difference than we think. It can. I have seen in my own life that I was very confused and very angry, and I saw a big difference between us because I have felt discriminated, mainly in Mexico, curiously. And so,
based on what?
You know, based on my indigenous root on the one side, and on the other, because I'm a Yankee, I'm a gringa.
So you lose both ways.
I lose
you're
both ways.
You're not Mexican enough and you're not
That's
American
right.
enough.
That's right, okay. Yeah. So I was bitter about that, but music has really made things come together for me, and I'm so grateful for this enormous gift.
Lila Downs' new album is called Al Chile. Lila, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Downs is performing at the Ford Theaters in L.A. on October 19th and 20th and at the Segerstrom Center in Costa Mesa on October 27th. Her album, Al Chile, is available now. Coming up, Flower Power gets a soulful twist from a veteran R&B singer. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. If you've seen this summer's The Last Black Man in San Francisco, you might have been struck by the film's powerful reimagining of a famous hippie anthem.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear
That singer, Michael Marshall, also happens to be the original vocalist on a hit song from the 1990s that makes a prominent appearance in another movie that came out earlier this year, Jordan Peele's Us. The Frame contributor Chloe Veltman recently met up with Marshall in the Bay Area. After Marshall fought for recognition for decades, Veltman says that the R&B singer might finally be starting to get his due.
My name is Michael Marshall, a.k.a. Mike Measy. What I'm gonna do right now is tell you a little bit about me.
In his autobiographical song, Who Is He?, Michael Marshall sings repeatedly about feeling invisible. The R&B singer has collaborated with renowned hip-hop artists such as E-40, San Quinn and the Loonies over a career spanning more than three decades. He's made several hits, and his work has been featured in two prominent movies this summer. But the 53-year-old says his efforts largely still go unheralded.
They all have my voice in their house, in their car, on their phone, somewhere. Everybody knows me, they just don't know who I am.
All across the nation, such a strange vibration, people in motion.
Marshall's performance of this song from the movie The Last Black Man in San Francisco has raised his profile.
I've heard a lot of people say that I never even knew I liked that song until I heard this version.
LA-based composer Emil Mosseri wrote the score for The Last Black Man and is among a growing group of industry insiders who've embraced Marshall's vocal gift. Mosseri says the film's director, Joe Talbot, was a longtime fan of Marshall's when he tapped the singer to cover San Francisco, Be Sure to Wear Flowers in Your Hair in the movie.
Everybody was in tears the first time they heard him sing it. It was just this incredible performance. They knew right away that they had gold.
Sitting in the kitchen of a friend's house near Berkeley on a recent morning, Marshall, who's tall, goateed, and loosely dressed in sweats and spectacles, tells me he had no trouble reworking John Phillips and Scott McKenzie's 1967 hit. He's covered other songs by white artists over the years, like Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again, Naturally. Marshall says he received an immersion in white hippie culture as an undergrad at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo.
I'm pretty good singing white people's covers. Unsoul music, non-soul music, I'm good at singing that.
Marshall started out performing in high school talent shows. It was not long after graduating from Berkeley High that he achieved his first success as a member of the band Timex Social Club with a track called Rumors in 1986. The song soared up the charts in several countries, including the US and UK. Marshall's career could have taken off at that point, but instead, things in his life started to derail.
I was not prepared. So I'm bumping my head, skinning my knees at every turn.
Marshall says his troubles started after he passed up a 10-year record deal on the back of the rumor's success. The singer says he feared being locked in.
We read all the stories about how artists were being treated. Prince was complaining. Michael Jackson was complaining.
He then watched helplessly as his former producer, Jay King, formed a new band, Club Nouveau, and used some of Timex Social Club's musical ideas to fuel new hits. Why you treat me so bad? Like Why You Treat Me So Bad from 1987. Marshall partly blames himself for his lack of business sense, but he says King and others swindled him out of royalties and credit, leading him down a long, self-destructive path of bitterness and drug abuse.
Yeah, it was bad. I was literally trying to kill myself.
I reached Jay King on the phone at his office in Sacramento. The music producer blames the singer's misfortunes on his drug habit, but he still respects the man's golden voice.
Even with all the abuse that he's put on his voice, it's so beautiful and resonant that even he can't destroy it.
For more than two decades, Marshall was lost to crack cocaine. But he still managed to release music once in a while, like the memorable vocal hook on the 1995 Loonies weed anthem, I Got Five On It. Marshall says for years he wasn't properly credited or compensated for that song either.
People who knew me would say, oh, that's Mike and all that, but the radio wasn't saying my name. And the artists were having shows and not inviting me.
Starting around 2004, with the help of his wife, April, Marshall managed to get clean and gradually sorted out his business affairs. Now he says the royalty checks are starting to flow in. He's licensed some uses of I Got Five On It, and he also has some new projects in mind, like a cover album.
There's a cover of a Simply Red song I want to do.
Which one?
It Should Have Been Me. At this moment in time, is it in your mind at all? Sunrise.
Oh, yeah.
Sunrise.
And he wants to revamp the alphabet song that kids learn in school.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Marshall says he hopes children will find his version of the classic ditty more memorable.
D, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
For The Frame, I'm Chloe Veltman.
Man, I'm alone again. Naturally.
One final note before we go. It's Thursday, and that's when we send out our weekly newsletter. You can keep up with the show and the wider world of entertainment by signing up at theframe.org/newsletter. You can also find us by following us on Twitter and Facebook. You'll find us at The Frame. And that's it. I'm John Horn at the Moan Broadcast Center. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.